Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 48 for December 5th, 2009. 48 cores, no waiting. This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by the new voice-activated Sync, featuring hands-free calling, music search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. It's time for Twitch. Let's talk about computer hardware. Ryan is here. Ryan Shrout from PC Perspective, PCPer.com. And this is exciting, Ryan, because this is our first podcast.
That's right. You might think, based on the title, the show number,
episode 48, our new podcast, or 47. we can't even figure out what number it is.
We're just gonna guess. We're just gonna go with the flow. It took us 47 tries to get it right.
Well, I owe you an apology.
Close enough.
One of the reasons I didn't rush to make a podcast out of this is because you already have the PC Perspective podcast.
True.
And I didn't want to duplicate our efforts. But that really is more a bunch of guys sitting around talking about, you know, what it all means. This is right. A show where we really talk about what's new in computer hardware.
Yep.
It's the new.
It's the kind of news a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's the news show. And then you guys do the chew on it and spit it out, that show.
Exactly. We usually ramble on for a little bit longer on that one.
Yeah, this is a one-hour show, and it's always a great way. I'll tell you what, I'll be honest, I got a little out of touch with PC hardware.
I know,
and wasn't really paying attention because nowadays, you know, you just buy a computer, you don't. So it's been really fun for me to get reattached, and you know, there are some really. This is a good time to talk about computer hardware because incredible new chips from Intel, solid-state drives are just about to take off. This is a, you know, we got these new Ion motherboards, these new netbooks. I mean, there's a lot to talk about with computer hardware.
Very much so.
Yeah. So let's start with, a new chip from Intel. We were talking on this on Mac Break Weekly. 48 cores?
Oh, yeah. It's not an officially released processor yet. It's not going to be available to consumers or anything anytime soon, at least. But they held a big press event to announce it. So my guess is they're pretty close to actually releasing these into the server world, into the you know, the enterprise class customer world. It is a 48 core x86 Intel architecture processor. I mean, it is essentially a couple of other editors and I were debating on what they haven't gone into a whole lot of detail of what actually each individual core is. We don't know how much power each core actually has in terms of processing power. We'll be curious to see if it's based on like the Intel Atom architecture, or maybe if it's in a little bit more trimmed down than that in order to get 48 of them onto a single die.
That's crazy. So it's one die? Wait a minute. It's not like dual core, or I mean a dual die. It's one die?
It's one enormous die. It's 567 millimeters squared, which probably doesn't mean a lot to most people, but the Intel Linfield processor that just came out a couple of months ago, I guess now, is 296 millimeters.
Holy cow.
So 80, 85, 90% more than that. So it's a big chip. No getting around that. It's a big chip. But when you've got 48 completely independent cores that support all the x86 instructions, Intel architecture, pretty much anything technically I would think you would be able to run this in your laptop or your desktop if you know you're so inclined. And what's interesting, one of the interesting things about it is that it's not a power hog either. Apparently at idle they're getting power consumption numbers around 25 watts 25 and under
watts.
Full load.
Well, that's pretty good, right?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
No, that's yeah. And then fully loaded about 125 watts. So that is kind of, if you look at the desktop CPU market today, that's kind of the same kind of mins and maxes that you're used to seeing today in terms of, you know, maybe you see 140 watt processor from Intel and their Extreme Edition Core i7 line, that kind of thing. But it's mostly in the 125 range. So they were conscious to keep the power consumption of this part relatively similar to other CPUs in the market. So I would guess that it would be installed in similar type systems. We're not going to see dramatically different rack mount designs or anything like that for this particular chip. Now, what's interesting about it is, I don't know if we talked about it at the beginning of this show. It might have been sometime late 07. It might have been before this time. We talked about Terascale computing from Intel in a different light. And they actually first started showing off a mini core prototype. So they call this mini cores. So you had single core, you've got multi-core, 1, 2, and 4. And then at some arbitrary point, they decided to call it mini core because 48 is mini and not really just multi anymore. Either way, we actually saw an 80 core processor back in 2006 and again in 2007 from Intel's development labs. And this was called the 2006 mini core prototype, but they called it a Terascale prototype at the time. But what you were seeing, so you think about it, so those were 80 cores. This one's only 48 cores. So what happened in that time period that they weren't able to actually get it going that fast? Well, what happened was the 80 cores on that initial processor weren't full x86 Intel architecture cores. They were really kind of dumbed down floating point processors, more for a proof of concept that can we squeeze 80 of something together on the same chip and make it run at a reasonable frequency and a reasonable power consumption. And so they kind of migrated that development onto this 48 core chip that I can't really compare performance between what they might have been getting out of the previous and what they're getting out of it today, because they're very different in what they do. x86 architecture versus just raw floating point processors. But getting 48 x86 cores on a CPU, obviously impressive. Like, you know, if you guys were talking about on MacBreak Weekly as well, then it kind of, it's not just Intel. It's not hardware nerd news. It's kind of like industry impressive news, I guess, at this point.
Now, so this is not what I was thinking about. I was thinking about what they were, and this is what we talked about on MacBreak Weekly, something called Gulftown. So there's an enthusiast site in Poland called PC Lab, which, for all I know, this is a hoax. I don't know. But PC Lab briefly featured a review of a 6-core Xeon chip, codenamed Gulftown. It was taken down, they say, by the request of Intel. Now, I know you guys get chips ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And for all we know, you already have a chip like this. And you honor the embargo and you publish the results when Intel says it's okay. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, I mean, the Gulftown process. Yeah, Gulftown. Yeah, Intel has talked about Gulftown publicly. At the Intel Developer Forum August or September.
The article said that they're going to call it the i9.
Okay, that I don't know for sure yet. We haven't gotten any kind of
Q1 2010. Q1 2010 soon.
Yep. Actually, originally when I had heard that we were going to start seeing it in Q4, but obviously we're running out of Q4 at this point. So we might get samples maybe before Christmas time, that type of thing.
You don't have a chip yet.
Don't have one yet.
Okay.
Don't have
32
one yet.
Nanometer. This is all according to PC Lab. It is a 6-core that they will, you could pair as Apple often does. And the article I'm reading is from Apple Insider. So the thinking maybe was that the next generation Mac Pro would have dual Gulftowns for a total of 12 processors, each with hyper threading for a total of 24 threads.
That's 100% believable, and I see no reason why they wouldn't do that. The reason I can say that is all the Gulftown processor will run in current x58 motherboards. So if you have a Core i7, one of the original Core i7 processors fits in the LGA 1366 socket, quad core, hyper threaded for 8 total threads, you will be able to buy a Gulftown processor. 6 cores, 12 threads, and stick it in your system pending a BIOS release from your motherboard manufacturer. But I've had conversations with ASUS and MSI and Gigabyte, and pretty much all of them have said, all of our motherboards will support that processor before it's released. Actually, I think ASUS is actually telling us now that their boards already support it. So if you know somebody like at PC Lab happened to get a hold of one through outside sources,
they could actually run it. They'd have a motherboard.
Right.
So you've heard of PC Lab? They're not.
No, I think what they probably had up there was true, especially that they've taken it down since.
Yeah.
That's always one of the clues, right? Is the rumor true? It's like, well, did the company react?
Right.
You know,
I mean, we don't know the company react. PC Lab says the company reacted. The other information I'll just give you is that they did the benchmark it, and they said the new chips are 50% faster than previous quad-core Xeon, I should say, not Xeon. And then use up to 50% less power, which would be, I guess, because it's 32 nanometer. That's also credible.
The 50% less power seems questionable to me. I know there will be a drop in power at idle, but I mean, if you're loading 6 cores, 32 nanometer versus loading 4 cores,
you're right.
At 45 nanometer,
you're right.
My guess would be that those would come out even, close to even, in terms of power consumption, which is still a win for the Golftown CPU if that's the case, because you're getting 50% theoretical more processing power for the same thermal limits, for the same actual power draw. So that would still be a big win.
Great.
But yeah, that is different than the 48-core architecture.
Yeah, oh, it's only half. If you have dual processors.
These are not hyper-threaded. I mean, these are actually individual cores. 48 individual cores on a single CPU. So, I mean, it is very much so a different architecture. It doesn't have coherent cache design in it at all. The part of the magic that makes a 48 core processor work, one of the problems is communication between all those cores. How do you kind of mitigate communication between all these different CPUs that might be working on the same project? And Intel has created what essentially is a 2D mesh networking system on the die of the processor that connects each of these 24 tiles. Each tile, I think of, they're calling it a 48 core processor that has 24 tiles. Each tile has 2 cores. So I think of it as almost 24 really compact dual core CPUs networked together on the same die with extremely high bandwidth interconnect. I think they say 256 gigabytes per second of bandwidth capable in this networking, in this mesh networking system. So it is, I mean, what's odd about this CPU is they call it the single chip cloud computer, the kind of marketing name for right now, the SCC. And I guess the idea here is, cloud computing doesn't necessarily require a lot of processing power, but it will require a lot of threads, right? So if you're Google, for example, and you've got how many hundreds of thousands of people running Gmail all at the same time, it's not really necessarily a processing heavy task to move that data around, but you need a lot of threads to be able to handle it. Well, this CPU would theoretically be able to have 48 threads, being able to do all those types of things independently. Or you could use it for things like high performance computing, where you want super extremely highly threaded applications, a single application that's highly threaded running. You could do that on this as well. You know, so it's core for core. Is this going to be, is one of the cores on this CPU anywhere close to the performance of one of the cores on the Core i7 or the Golftown even? Not even close. I mean, we are guessing that it might have less compute power than a single Atom core today. Maybe the same. Maybe about the same.
Okay. So 48 of them is, you know.
I mean, it's still a lot. And what it does, it gives you a lot of flexibility.
Yeah.
As well as a programmer. Now, I haven't heard anybody mention this, but keep in mind we talk about Larrabee a lot,
right.
And Larrabee is what Intel will be taking into the discrete graphics card market sometime soon. And this sounds awfully similar to what Larrabee would be. We're talking about many, many x86 cores working together to do graphics processing, whereas this is many, many x86 cores that they're not marketing towards graphics at all. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of overlap between this architecture and that architecture once we finally see both and can compare them side by side.
Yeah.
So
very interesting. It's exciting. Impressive. Yeah, it's impressive is the word. We're going to move on. We've got some great stuff to talk about. Alan Malventano is going to join us. He is the storage guru at PC Perspective. New flash drives. Or a quick review of the new Drobo Pro 8 Bay. and a whole lot more as we continue with This Week in Computer Hardware. Plus, you can tell me where to stick my new SSD. I bought it because of you guys.
Before we seem to have that effect on people.
Before we do that, I blame you, Shrout. Before we do that, I do want to mention something else I bought recently, a new Ford. And with that new Ford came an amazing Ford Sync. Oh, can I just say, wow? Wow. I love the Ford Sync. It is, of course, Bluetooth hands-free phone. And, you know, the idea is nowadays in California, where I live, and in 18 other states, you're not allowed to hold the phone to your ear. But whether it's against the law or not, it's pretty clear that there are a lot of distractions in the car. And if we could just make a way to listen to music, listen to podcasts, make calls, find out the weather, learn sports scores, even get turn-by-turn directions without taking our eyes off the road, without taking our hands off the wheel, that the world would be a better place. Yes, Ford has done it with the new Sync. Wow, is this amazing. I just updated using my USB key to 3.1, and let me give you an example. You're sitting in the car, you press the button on the wheel, it makes a little boop, and you say, play This Week in Computer Hardware. Actually, you'd probably say play Twitch. Mm-hmm. It depends what the MP3 tag is. Play Twitch 47, and boom, it starts playing. Play I'm listening to a book on tape. Play The Moat in God's Eye. Boom, it plays my Audible book. You say, weather. You can even get turn-by-turn directions. I say, if you press the button, it says navigation, destination, Starbucks. It takes you to the nearest Starbucks. Now, let me tell you, that alone makes it worthwhile. And you know, this is not you don't have to buy the big $3,000 GPS package. It comes with Ford Sync. You don't have to have a Garmin Nuve or anything. It's got built-in GPS. The GPS is useful in emergencies, too. It has a 911 assist. It'll use your phone to call 911 if the airbags are deployed and play a recorded message, send the GPS coordinates down, and give you a chance to talk. I can go on and on. I want you to take a look at the new Ford Sync at the website, syncmyridepodcast.com. And if you get there before December 9th, you'll see instructions there on how you can win your own free Nano or Zune. They kind of want to underscore the fact that this works with Nanos, Zunes, like just about any USB MP3 player. SyncMyRidePodcast.com, or I'll tell you the rules. Basically, all you have to do is tweet, say, I'm listening to the first Twitch episode. This is so exciting. And then put the hashtag #Sync, SYNC, My Ride Podcast. And Ford will automatically enter you into the drawing to win. They've given away a ton of them. I think they have 15 total Nanos, 15 total Zunes, and they're giving away one a day now through December 9th. SyncMyRidePodcast.com or tweet using #SyncMyRidePodcast. And, of course, the next time you're at your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury dealer, make sure you take a look at the brand-new, really cool Ford Sync. You're going to love it.
I do have a question for you about that.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Do you plug in the data cable for the iPod or Zune?
Yeah. So it has first of all, every car should have a USB port.
Yes.
Can we stipulate that? I mean, that's just like a no-brainer. So many don't. Or they have tease. They might have an iPod dock, but that's no good if you have a Zune or if you have a Droid. So what this has is just a USB port, and I just put my iPod cable and connected it. It immediately saw the iPod, says, I see a new device, indexes what's in there, and now it knows what's in there. You leave it connected, and you can say, play the Beatles or play the name of any song. You can play similar, play next, play previous. You've got, basically full voice command of the iPod or a Zune.
That's really cool.
Or you could use, if you put MP3s in a USB key, you just plug the, or get, now I know what I'm going to do with my hard drive. I'll put it in my Ford. All I need is a USB interface, plug it in there, and I can put all my music on there. It's a little excessive in terms of speed, but okay, what the hell. It'll read, as long as it can see the MP3s on there and it can read the MP3 tags, it'll index them, keep it in its memory, and then you can use voice command on it. So even a dumb hard drive, you can use voice command on. It's very slick.
That's pretty cool.
Based on Windows CE. But I just saw an article in Fast Company saying that the next generation, they're going to open source it. They're going to make an API so people can write applications for it. This is a platform. And by the way, you can upgrade it via the USB port. So I go to the SyncMyRide.com, which is for the owner's page, and it knows my VIN number. It knows who I am. I can put software on the USB key and install it. So I was able to upgrade to the latest version. You can upgrade. It's really, it's kind of the next generation of computers in a car. It's really cool.
Very cool.
Yep. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Alan Malventano is on the line. Hello, Mr. Mal. I mean, sorry, Mr. Master Chief. What do you call yourself? Master Chief.
Oh,
right?
No, not Master Chief. No, I'm just Chief.
Chief. Hello, Chief. How are you?
Hello, hey, how's it
Chief?
Going?
How are you?
So when I'm not being a chief at work, I'm busy doing hardware reviews here.
I love that. At PCPer.com, Alan is a... How did you know, when we first started doing the show, Alan was just a listener, am I right?
Yes. Yes, I was. I ended up calling in, actually, the day Ryan was up there at the cottage.
That's right.
I called in. They were pitching ideas for Uggam, and I came in with some conglomeration of weird, you know, hodgepodge solid-state drive idea. This is back before good ones were out.
And yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's cool is that I think we were building Uggam at the time. And we got such great... That's really how I met Ryan. His Colleen came in and said, Ryan's here from PC Perspective. He'd like to help us figure out what chip to get, what motherboard to get. And you were so instrumental. And then we got Alan into the act, and he helped us figure out whether a Raptor or an SSD would be the right choice. And so it was a great collaboration, which basically turned into a show.
Yeah, well, pretty much.
And then in the backstory of that, I found a nasty bug with a certain Intel drive that sort of put me on the map. And then there you go. One thing led to another, and here I am.
And now the new Intel drives have trim support. Thanks to you, Alan Malventano. Thanks to you, my friend.
No. They were doing trim with or without me.
Oh, okay.
I just had to get in to fix a bug. Anyhow.
Let's start with the Drobo, because I saw it was great. Where was – somebody put a link to this show and your review of the Drobo.
Right.
Was that on Gadget or Gizmodo? Gizmodo did it.
And Gadget put the link right on their page, and Gizmodo picked it up too.
That's so cool.
And that was the video from a couple months back. Remember when I did that teardown when we first got the Drobo in-house?
Yes, and you were so impressed that it had a battery backup.
Oh, yeah.
That they didn't even advertise.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And those were a lot of good features that we saw before we even really started digging into the thing. And then within that time, I've since been able to go through all the features, and there's an entire review up at PCPer.com. It's in the storage section. It's actually, I think, the top link. And we really, put it through its paces, did everything we could to break it. I still haven't been able to break an array on that thing.
Wow.
Not for lack of trying, as we discussed, a couple months back, and still just randomly removing drives from it while the thing's going, and just won't break. But we got to look at the other, features beyond the fact that it's, a pretty bulletproof device. Went through all those features. It has, basically administrator level kind of things. It emails you if something happens with the array. You can set it to send you an email, or pretty enterprise level kind of features that it'll do in the background, and all that stuff's up there. We actually got some performance benchmarks on it. It ends up doing, it'll max out USB. Unfortunately, it's only USB 2.0. A lot of new devices are 3, but it'll max out USB 2, and it'll also come really close to maxing out gigabit Ethernet if you connect it over, if you make an iSCSI link to it, which it's also capable of. So you end up seeing about 90 meg per second transfer rate, which is, it's nothing to sneeze at, considering it's an external device, and iSCSI, the Drobo could, be a couple hundred feet away from your PC, and you'd still be getting that data rate, which is pretty good.
Best would be FireWire 800, though, right, if you had the choice.
Actually, it goes a little quicker on iSCSI.
Really?
It's just it was engineered. It was more optimized for the iSCSI interface than it was for FireWire 800 when they made it. So it just does a little bit better over iSCSI. So if you have that extra gigabit Ethernet port on your system, definitely a good way to go there.
Yeah.
Along those lines, though, and we haven't reviewed one of these yet, but there are new models out that just came out within the past. During that holiday hiatus we were doing. there's a Drobo Model S, which is a 5-bay version of the previous. It's basically going to replace the 4-bay, the original Drobo.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, because I have the original Drobo, so this would be 5, which
this
makes it
5
one
bays.
Better.
It's one better. It's actually going to be the same as it was if you use the other extra feature, which is dual redundancy. It sort of doesn't make sense to do dual redundancy if you only have 4 bays to begin with, because you're giving up 2 of those drives. So if you have five, it's a little easier to swallow, you know, because three drives worth of storage, two drives for the redundancy. The other good thing on that model is external serial ATA, which everybody has been asking for on a Drobo. So it has it, which is a pretty big deal.
Very cool. So what, what kind of transfer speeds would you think we might see then if it was a well-optimized eSATA connection?
It's probably going to settle around 140, 150, most likely.
Okay. Is that megabits, gigabits?
Megabytes.
Megabytes per second.
Megabytes.
Right. Most eSATA connections I've seen end up running around 150.
Oh, interesting. Because internal SATA is what? Three gigabits.
Which works out to around 300, a little shy of 300.
Okay. So it's, so external is about half as fast as the nominal max internal? No, that can't be right.
Well, in practice, it ends up being about that. Because, yeah, especially if you have a longish kind of external serial ATA cable, right?
I always just assume because external is just really a connection to the motherboard, that it would be as fast. But you're saying the cable length has a big impact.
Right. And SATA's pretty good about dropping down. If it sees that, hey, there's too much length on this cable, or there's too much interference or whatnot, it'll just drop back down to the more conservative speed, which most of the time ends up just being SATA 1 speed. But either way, better than, you know, almost every motherboard that's out now has some form of eSATA out the back. So, you know, even ones that don't have dual gigabit. So that's a good thing. They also came out with a Drobo Elite model. That's way, way enterprise level stuff.
How many drives is that?
It's still eight, but it has two gigabit connections, does iSCSI over both, and it's able to handle multiple users, which is the first Drobo model that does that. It's able to act like a real SAN, like a storage area network, where you just have that device sitting there, and it.
Oh, great!
You know,
of course, we just bought a $20,000 SAN.
Of course.
Yeah, you know.
Remember, you have to buy stuff in order for technology to progress.
Right.
That's how this works. We know this.
Well, we did try. I mean, Colleen brought some Drobo, the Drobo Pros in to see, but this is what we needed. This is what we needed.
But that Drobo Elite it's a pretty out there model. I mean, we're talking $3,500 retail model. It's meant to be, you know, pretty much a powerhouse. Has upgraded CPUs and everything. It's able to max out to 2 gigabit Ethernet connections. So you're talking, you know, a couple hundred megabytes per second.
Oh, they can run in parallel?
Well, they're meant to, like, you can actually set up virtual volumes within the storage pool of all the drives in the Drobo, and then you can assign them to various users over various ports. So you can sort of load balance manually and say, okay, a lot of the workload's on this port. You know, I'm going to put X number of users on that guy, and then this other guy really needs a lot of bandwidth, so I'm just going to give him his own iSCSI port. So it'll work like that.
Cool.
Pretty good stuff, but expensive.
Well, not compared to a SAN.
I was going to say, considering what I know what he costs for that other one, but yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You think this, I mean, so that's, what would I not get if I got this instead of the SAN?
It's more than two user access.
Well, the device just came out and, you have more than, you know, you wouldn't have to. Right.
We have three people accessing the SAN simultaneously. I'm recording to it using Final Cut Pro, so it's writing big bytes to the drive, and at the same time, we've got two editors upstairs working on other files all off that same SAN. So I couldn't do that. I can only do two of those three things.
Well, no, you could have, as long as the other two people were sharing one of the ports, that's fine. It's meant for multiple users.
Oh, it is?
Like more than two. Yeah. Yeah, you just determine how many people are on each port, and you only have two ports.
I see.
Okay.
So, because it's Ethernet.
Yeah. Yeah, it shares. It's meant to share. Now, unlike the other previous models of the Drobo that are meant to go just to a single host system.
Interesting.
That's the difference.
Do you put a router on it? A switch?
Yeah, you'd put it behind a switch, like a gigabit switch.
Interesting. Okay.
Look at that. Look, you can hear him thinking, can't you?
I'm thinking.
I know, he's thinking. He's already spent the money.
No, I did. That's the problem. I spent the $20,000 on the SAN. I'm sure there's great reasons why a SAN is better still.
Yeah. I'm sure there are.
It's professional. It better be. It costs that much. No, so, I'll watch this with interest because as we expand, we might need another one. And I think that, of course, this always happens, right? Storage gets cheaper, faster, better.
Yeah.
Right. Right? And they're pretty good about adding features just through firmware updates and software updates.
So I have to say, you're still pretty bullish on Droba.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I even at the last page of that review piece that I did, I even compared it with, if you were going to try to build something like this on your own, you know, pick your own case, make it some kind of 8-bay hot swap thing to be equivalent to it, and the price ends up being right around the same.
Yeah.
So why go through all the trouble?
Colleen says she knew all about it. She looked at it, and it's not fast enough, so I feel better.
Okay. There you go.
Okay.
There we go. But now, speaking of storage getting faster, getting less less expensive. Well, this is not really less or more expensive. Alan also took a look at the OCZ Colossus solid state drive. Now, what's interesting about this drive is it is a 3.5-inch solid state drive. So it's the size.
That's pretty big. Look,
we're used to SSDs being 2.5-inch variety laptop, traditional laptop size. So what do they do with this extra space? They put lots of SSDs inside of it. And Alan's going to show up here on the screen here. They're actually, what is it? It's two separate cards that kind of plug into a backplane. And each of those cards actually holds the equivalent of two solid-state drives
on it. Freaking magic trick there. You just pulled another card out of the card.
I like the fact that we have an announcer and then have
great.
The shower.
It's really good, yeah.
Yes. So you get Alan is about to pull a second drive out of his butt. Wow.
You can keep that one, Alan.
Yeah, I don't know.
So how much storage?
Brains, but don't go there.
How much storage now? How much are we talking about here? I mean, they call it the Colossus.
Well, it's not so much. It's really how much they can scale it to. Because what they're doing is they're taking four of their Vertex drives and sort of reworking them and making their own, their own main boards.
Is this going to be the first terabyte SSD?
Yeah, it's the first that's reasonably available now, and they can pull that off because they have four of these, it's basically, as far as like electrically connection, the electrical connections of this thing, there's four OCZ Vertex drives connected through internal RAID out to one serial ATA connector. So they make Vertex drives up to 256 gig. So in theory, if they put enough flash memory on this thing, there's 64 flash chips on it in total. So all they have to use is larger capacity flash chips, throw 64 of them on there. Now, granted, you have to spend about, it's up there. It's like $3,000-ish plus to get it, because you're talking about $3 per, $3 per gig. But you end up getting 1,000 gig in one solid-state drive package.
So that's the thumbnail price these days of solid-state storage, about $3 a gig.
It's about $3.
Compared to something like 10 cents a gig for spinning.
Right, but if you think about it, wasn't that long, that far back? Hard drives.
I remember. $3 a gig was considered a great price.
Right.
I mean, we were buying 2 gigabyte drives a few years ago. That would have been a $6 drive. So right. That this is a good price. And we're well on our way towards affordability.
So it is good, but there's a couple of catches. Okay, because the Colossus drive. Since it does this form of internal RAID where it's using these silicon image controllers to, take four SSDs basically and convert them down into one connection, you lose some things when you do that. So in this case, you're losing trim support because trim will not pass through these RAID chips.
We're going to talk about trim, so you better kind of talk briefly, recap for those who are new to the show.
And what trim is it's an extra command they added to the serial ATA protocol. Or just the ATA protocol. And this lets the operating system tell the solid-state drive, hey, I just deleted these files. I don't need you to keep track of that area of your flash memory anymore.
Why is that important?
This is important because what we learned back on my first review for PC Perspective, actually, was that if you do a bunch of small random writes to these solid-state drives, they try to optimize themselves in different ways by remapping where they're putting data. So they'll take a bunch of random writes that were meant to be scattered across, say, a bunch of random places on the drive. They'll remap them so that they end up being written to the flash memory in more of a sequential fashion. So this is faster. Flash memory likes to be sequential. It doesn't like to be really small random writes. So in doing that, it ends up in a way fragmenting itself. So this is not the same fragmentation as you run your Windows defragmenter and it fixes it. This is fragmentation within the solid state drive that you can't have any kind of access to. You can't just tell it to defragment itself. TRIM is in a roundabout way doing that. It's accomplishing that task of, okay, don't keep track of that area anymore. I just overwrote that file, and then the solid state drive takes that command and goes, okay, roger that, and then it, you know, it flips it around and does whatever it needs to internally to, in most cases, it ends up defragmenting those areas. It just purges whatever those fragmented parts of the that data table were. So what this means is, over time, most solid state drives that you buy, they'll slow down a little bit the more you use them, and they'll slow down to some, you know, slower than new condition. Could be as bad as like half the write speed. TRIM ends up helping this and keeps the drive running a lot closer to the speed it was running when it was brand new.
So essentially, this, you know, spinning drives, the issues are fragmentation, seek time. You don't have any fragmentation on an SSD. You don't have any seek time on an SSD. This is the replacement problem that you have on SSDs.
But
TRIM solves it.
TRIM solves it probably like 95% of the way. It's the vast majority of the slowdown that you would see gets fixed by this. So it's an important thing. You know, it's an important thing for over time. Now the Colossus, it has so much going on in parallel behind those RAID chips that it's able to pretty much max out serial ATA no matter what, because it has four and it's only one serial ATA connection.
So it's kind of like RAID.
It is RAID. It is exactly RAID.
Yeah.
But the bottleneck really for that particular drive is just the connection to it, as opposed to any kind of fragmentation over time, slowdowns. It's so overkill behind the RAID.
You don't have to worry about it.
right. So
that's interesting.
That's okay.
So not only is this drive bigger, it's faster.
Oh yeah, it completely maxes out serial ATA too.
Two. The only
drawback. Correct. The only drawback is that it's the current, you know, well, the generation that the vast majority of people have right now, right?
Right.
But it is able to completely max that guy out. It does 240 megabytes per second reading and writing.
Gee-many.
So
reading and writing are equal?
Yeah. Yeah, they're dead equal because it's as fast as serial ATA will go.
It just keeps up.
Yeah, it just
keeps up. We could do more, but you
can't.
You just don't send us enough. If you'd send us more data, we'd speed up.
Right,
so,
right.
So how far off is serial ATA 3?
Well, Ryan reviewed a couple of...
It's already on motherboards.
A few weeks back.
So, yeah,
it's on motherboards.
Actually, the new system I built for myself over Thanksgiving weekend has SATA 6G support on board for it, as well as USB 3.0 support.
Really? I didn't know we were seeing USB 3 hardware, too.
Yep. Wow. I tested USB 3.0, a hard drive dock as well, because I think we went from about 20 megs a second from USB 2 to 125 megs a second for USB 3, I believe. And this was the very earliest controller's very earliest dock sled and that kind of stuff as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of starting to be released. I've actually got a handful of motherboards in now that have support for it.
Interesting. So as fast as this... you know, new Colossus is this OCZ drive is will it?
It is possible to, if you did a bunch of really small random writes to that thing, it is still possible to slow it down. Right. However, it has a special firmware that OCZ has worked on for the NDLX controllers that does sort of a background garbage collection. It tries to defragment itself in the background slowly. So,
right.
So they put a lot of workarounds in it, you know, and made it work really well. It's just that. Yeah, I just wish it had serial ATA 3 because then it would go so much faster.
Always wishing for it to go faster.
Do you think it wouldn't max SATA 3 out?
Yeah, it probably could.
You think it would?
Yeah, because it might even get really close on writes as well, because a single OCZ Vertex almost maxes out on read speeds, a single channel. So this has four of them. So, you know, SATA 3 is only twice as fast as SATA 2, so this would still have twice as much.
This sounds like a deal at $3,000, actually. If you were running a server, you'd really want this. What about reliability and robustness?
Yeah, it should be fine on those. I wouldn't expect any kind of problems with it. Here's the other catch to the being behind a RAID, though. It does not scale in as far as IOs per second, how many commands per second it can handle. It doesn't scale... from a native command queuing perspective. In other words, if you start stacking up commands on this drive, it's still going to handle them just as fast as if you were feeding the drive the command sequentially. So most solid-state drives are that way, actually. The ones that are not are the Intel drives. The Intel drives ramp up and start just, they're like, they turn the turbo on or whatever you want to call it when you, you know, if you can throw a bunch of commands at it in parallel, which is pretty significant.
All right, we got to move on because we're running long. But final thoughts. This sounds like a great drive.
Yeah, that's a good drive. Yep.
Amazing.
If your goal is high capacity, this is probably your best option.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want high capacity and are willing to spend the money, yes. And then on the flip side, if you're willing to do small capacity and want to spend a small amount of money,
but want that speed,
but want actually. As far as iOS per second goes, even faster than the Colossus, believe it or not.
How is that possible? Oh, my goodness.
Well, there's a Kingston SSD Now. Now, here's what's funny. The SSD Now series from Kingston is, if you look at their product lineup on their website, it's loaded with J-Micron-based solid-state drives, which Leo knows that I don't like.
Not so hot.
Not so hot. This one is in that same series, but it's only 40 gig. And there's a little secret ingredient in there, and it actually contains an Intel.
See an Intel logo on that PCB.
Wait a minute. What the hell are they trying to pull here? Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. This drive is one half of an 80 gigabyte second generation Intel X25M.
So they're buying a bunch of X25Ms, taking them apart and splitting them up?
No, they're probably buying them in some form, you know, just getting half the flash memory on them or whatnot. But same controller, same amount of, you know, memory that RAM that the controller uses. It's just half the amount of flash. And it's a very, very speedy drive. We reviewed them. It's a 40 gig drive selling for right around $100.
Wow.
Now, that's still sort of pricey on the, you know, grand scheme of things. You can find cheaper ones, but they're going to be J-Micron.
So this is really fast, and it is $100, and 40 is plenty for Windows, a boot drive, bunch of applications. I mean, that's fine for your boot drive.
There's a couple of catches. The write speed is sort of the Achilles heel on this. The sequential write speed, it's limited to 40. So 40 meg per second is kind of slow. So as long as you can live with that, if you're using this on...
Well, that's why it'd be good for the OS.
Right. A perfect OS, you know, just OS, just Office.
You'd want a data or two. Yeah, you'd want a data drive.
Sure.
Right.
Perfect. Right. Big data, terabyte, you know, Caviar Black.
But you still get all the same perks from having a solid state drive. You know, you get the crazy fast boot, you know, the no bounce thing that Leo's so adamant about on his MacBook.
Love it.
Yeah.
This sounds great.
Yeah, it's a good drive. They came out with it. They're the only guys selling it.
What's the price?
$100.
It's $100. It's right plus or minus five or so. It's all over the place for about $100.
So this sounds like 2010 is going to be the year of the solid state drive. I mean, we're finally here.
Yeah, should be.
I'm going to make a prediction. By the end of this year, I mean, of 2010, by the end of this coming year, you're going to see these, you know, drives at a not comparable probably to spinning drives, but maybe only a factor of two, let's say. And at that point, you will be using SSD drives for your boot drive for sure. Don't you think?
I think that's perfectly reasonable. Yeah.
2X. Right now, especially it's like 30X.
Somebody in the chat room, write that down. Put that on a calendar. December next year, check Leo's predictions.
It's my prediction. I'm gonna live with that. We actually, you know, we should do a year-end prediction show, actually. That'd be a lot of fun.
That could be good.
Yeah. Well, Alan, you're the king of this stuff. You're the king. Does that sound reasonable to you, Alan?
I think it's there. But for me, it's there already.
Yeah, because you have more money than anybody.
What?
No?
No, he just gets the drugs.
Yeah, he gets the drives for free.
Yeah.
And look, I bought an X25M. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. The Newegg was discounting them to what was under 500, 480.
414.
Speaking of which, you can now update that drive that you purchased.
Right. How do I do that?
To the trim-enabled firmware. About a month back, Intel released this firmware for the X25 second-gen drives that enabled trim support.
Right.
So they promised they would do this in conjunction with Windows 7. They did. It was maybe a few days after the Windows 7 release, they came out with firmware.
To be clear, your operating system has to support it as well.
in order to get the benefit, yes.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with updating the drive.
But you just won't get any benefit.
Actually, you do, because they did some other timing tweaks, and the drive is actually very fast, even without trim being in used.
Oh, so I should definitely do this, even if I'm using a Mac, let's say.
Yes, the drive becomes, the latency on any given read or write drops almost by like half.
Is Windows 7 the only operating system that supports trim?
Currently, yes. I think so. There might be some experimental Linux builds that have some form of it in there, but Windows 7 is the safest way to go right now if you're looking for it.
So this sounds like this X25 that I bought should be going in a Windows 7 machine.
Yes, it would do its best in there.
And how do I upgrade the software? Is that a
actually, I did a news post on this for the for the new release of the firmware. Intel initially released a firmware called 02HA. That one had some weird bug that was affecting a few people to the point where Intel sort of hit their threshold of pain and decided to pull it back. And then did a couple more bug fixes, came out with 02HD. It's on the Intel website. I did a news post on it that links you straight there. It's on PC Perspective. It's on the news in the storage forum. It's like the top item there, I believe. It's pretty easy. You download it. It's an ISO straight from Intel. You burn it to a CD, boot off of it. It asks you, hey, I see an Intel drive. Do you want me to update it? Yes. Simple as that. It's right. And I would recommend backing up that OS or if you have anything installed on it before you do it. But I will say that that updater is not meant to wipe that data. Right. So
it's just,
you should be able to do it and just reboot right back into whatever you were running.
How about the SSD toolbox?
Right. There was a toolbox that came out in conjunction with the firmware a couple weeks back as well. Intel has pulled that for a completely different reason.
Oh.
Windows Vista and Windows 7 have these. Yeah, well, it's just another quick bug fix thing they want to do to make sure they get it right.
Gotcha.
Vista and 7 have that system restore, volume snapshot feature built into it, right? The problem was that the tool was not able to see that where the data was located for those snapshots. It didn't do enough digging. So what happened was what this tool can do is it can optimize the drive by basically, it looks at it, goes, hey, where's all the free space? And it looks at the partition table and looks at the, master.
We don't know what the will be.
Uh-oh. There he is. I see him moving again.
It looks at the master. What is that? Just continue on from that point. It looks at the master.
Okay. Yeah, looks at the master file table, figures out where all your free space is on the drive, and then it issues trim to the drive for all that free space. And in effect, it's almost like running a defrag, except in this case, it takes like 2.5 seconds tops, and it does like a 160 gig drive trimmed in like less than 3 seconds. It's ridiculously fast.
That would have been nice back in the day, right? With the spindle-based drives?
Yeah,
defrag overnight?
And that was with a 4 gig drive.
Right. The only catch was, in this case, since the utility didn't see where all your volume snapshots were, it was accidentally trimming those areas too. So if you tried to use System Restore after you did this, then it sort of wouldn't find the data that you were trying to restore.
That could be bad,
not good. So they pulled that back and they're tweaking that utility. They're probably going to push it back out, sometime soon. But good stuff, because that utility lets you effectively, you can trim one of those drives even if you're running Vista or XP, actually.
Right. So there, if you're not running Windows 7 and you want the values of trim, you can get it that way.
Once the utility comes out.
Right. Again.
Again.
Right. Another thing I wanted to mention real quickly before we get to the end of the show is quite a few segments on Twitch about building a Linfield system. And we kind of picked a bunch of different components. Leo built a system. I built a system metaphorically.
Yeah, virtual, because I didn't. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, I finally put one together. Over the Tuesday and Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I decided I was tired of everybody else having better hardware in their computer than me. Alan had all the SSDs. Lots of people have been buying Linfield. So I built a system around Linfield processor, the motherboard that has USB 3.0 and SATA 6G support, one of these Intel X25M 160 gig drives, and I recorded it on video and decided to make it like a kind of a DIY tutorial, how to put together your first PC hardware-wise video. So
wow, I did that. I did one of those in 1984.
Right.
So this is good. So, it's time to be updated.
It's updated.
Build your own computer with Leo Laporte.
That's kind of the problem with you know, these types of shows and talking with guys like us is we've all done it 100 times and, you know, and we don't think it's that big a deal. But if you've never done one before, I'd imagine people, obviously people are very hesitant to get into the field of building their own computer without some helpful advice step-by-step. But, you know, you go to these review sites now and everybody assumes you know a certain level of pre-information, and putting the hardware together and installing it in a case is likely on the top of that list. But it's been very surprising. I had, I've gotten quite a few emails after posting this video on our site that say, you know what, really, I thank you a lot. I read about hardware, but I've never really seen anybody put a system together in such a way. And now I'm going to take it upon myself to build a computer now that you've showed me how to select parts, what considerations
That's
to so keep
cool.
in mind.
That's really neat. Yeah.
And yeah, it actually, it turned out pretty well. And
you gave a plug to Kentucky in it, and that's good too.
Yeah, you know, it was funny as I went to the office, came to this office to put the system together and had no intentions originally of recording the video. As I started to put things together, I said, why don't I just turn on the camera and, you know, at least make it interesting. And so I happened to be in my casual University of Kentucky garb.
I wonder how many people will build this exact system. I mean, I think that's, I would guess that's what a lot of people will do.
I hope so. I'm really happy with the result that I came up with. There are some components that are perhaps more expensive. I say in the write-up below the video, it's like, look, if you're trying to cut costs, you know, that case, right, that Corsair case, really love it, but it's almost $300. You can get a really reasonable case for, you know, 60, right, 70, right, 100 bucks. Same thing with the motherboard. It's one of those brand new super high-end boards that has USB 3 and SATA 6G. It was almost $300. You could cut $200 off your price.
Oh, so this is that new motherboard. Oh.
Yeah, so that motherboard there, I mean, it just looks like a normal motherboard. And on the back, you'll see there are the P7P55DE.
Yeah.
It has two blue USB ports on the back, and that's the only indication that they're USB 3.0.
So you only put an i5 in this. Well, it is a home theater PC, so.
I put in an i5 750. Right. So it's quad core, but it doesn't have hyper threading. Right.
All you need.
Yeah, in reality, that's pretty much all you need.
Look at the sink. Holy cow. That heat sink looks like the UN building.
It gets the job done.
Jiminy. Yeah. It's passive, though. Oh, I see it has pipe. It has a heat pipe.
Yes, I do. I was going to actually use the Corsair H50, that kind of all-in-one integrated water cooler that we've talked about before, but I didn't have the 1156 bracket for it. They hadn't shipped me the bracket for the Linfield processor yet, since I had one of the early review samples, so I couldn't use it, and I'm not a very patient person, so I just picked whatever else was around, and that happened to be that Thermalright heatsink. So I go through the process of installing the heatsink.
I don't even know how that's going to fit in the case. I mean, that thing...
Luckily, it's a very big case.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's very tall. It's very tall.
Holy cow.
And there's a fan that goes on that, too, so it gets even bigger.
Jiminy.
But, you know, and like you said, you did this a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm you sure want to I see broke- it? I still have the video. Look at this. Build your own computer with the computer, Leo Laporte, the computer answer man. It's actually 1993.
And I have seen that before.
It says, a look at what makes IBM compatible personal computers tick and how to put one together yourself. In this half hour video, you'll learn how computers work, all about the motherboard, what microprocessors do, the secrets of CMOS, how to use the BIOS, how to add memory, how to install expansion cards, how to add disk drives, in plain English, with step-by-step instructions.
I think it's a marketing guy on my team.
So that thing you're reading, is that like a box with like a VHS tape?
It's VHS. You know what's really funny? It says in this half-hour video, you'll learn, and then it says videotape length 55 minutes. So I guess we couldn't get it all in a half an hour. This also features, and many people will be glad to pay extra for that, I actually cut myself during the videotaping of this, and they just kept rolling. You know, I got my hand in the case, and I'm going, You gotta be careful. These case edges can be a little sharp. And there's blood coming. You know, so this is precious. And it, by the way, still sealed in the carton.
Oh, okay. So you haven't opened that one.
Now, right. How much would you pay?
I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't think. Well, first of all, you have to have a VCR that plays VHS tapes.
I don't have a VCR anymore. I don't own one.
In fact, I better dub this off to digital soon, because soon this will be unplayable.
Yeah, send it off to one of those services. You know, burn it to DVD in super high quality, because I don't have a VCR to do it with now.
You know what cracks me up? The phone number on here is 1-800-8-ASK-LEO. It actually has almost exactly the same phone number as my new radio show does.
88.
Yeah. I guess somebody had the 800 number. Anyway, this looks like a great video. I'm so glad you made it, and you shot it beautifully. I mean, it's very clear, very easy to see.
I was using the new Canon 7D as well.
Oh, this is with the 7D. Oh, that's great. No wonder it looks so good.
Yep. But I figured I'd point people to that if you're listening, watching the show, or listening to the podcast, and you know you're interested in hardware but never have actually seen somebody put a system together. You can go to the website and look at that. And it's not universal. I don't go through operating system installation. I did have a comment. Somebody say, why don't you show installing the operating system?
And
I said, well, really, now with Windows, I put Windows 7 on it, obviously. You really you do three clicks, and then all of a sudden you're in the operating system. 20 minutes later, boom, you're in the OS. So I don't think the operating system installation is not really that complicated, especially if you're doing a straightforward system build. You know, one hard drive, no RAID configurations, no pre-installation of other storage drivers and that kind of stuff. It's the hardest part, the most complicated part is obviously if you're moving from one system to the other, is moving all your applications, moving all your data, backing up stuff. It's that's a real pain.
You're not going to want to put that on video. That's not.
No. Nobody wants to see you back. No one wants to see me back up.
And now, for the next 4 hours, I would like to back up my hard drive. Look at this PowerBird. I never heard of PowerBird. Is that a good power supply?
It's from a company called Top Power, actually, and it's actually a very good brand. They make a lot of the higher end power supplies for other companies that you have probably heard of, but they're a lesser known company in the retail world, but they're an ODM kind of build it for other guys. So
this is on PC Perspective, PCPer.com. Yep. Ryan shows you how to build your own, and it's got all the components. What was the price of this price?
I want to say it was like $2,200.
But
it's expensive.
System. Yeah.
It's a high-end system. You know, I had to use one of the Radeon HD 5870 graphics cards.
Oh, you had to. I had to. I had no choice. And three iFinity monitors.
If only my desk had enough room for it. Unfortunately, my desk right now, until I replace the desk, only has room for two monitors. So
that's why I'm renting a whole apartment just for my gaming PC.
I'm going to have Colleen make one of those swivel desks that she's building for herself and ship it out to me for all three displays there. So
this is great. This really does go into good detail. This is very nicely done. I'm impressed.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. One more story before we go. We got to wrap this thing up. And this is the Via Mobile ITX 4. What is it? You better tell me what that is.
I don't have a whole lot of details on this, but this was a new... I thought showing a picture of this and describing what it is would be at least somewhat impressive. This is a mobile ITX form factor that they launched.
This is a motherboard?
Yeah.
It looks like a circuit. I mean, it looks like an expansion card.
It's like a credit card.
Yeah.
What's funny is, so they're picking it up off of a daughter board. The daughter board down there has all the connections for your SATA, your PCI Express, and that kind of stuff. But that square that they're holding is the entire computer.
Oh, wow.
Memory, processor, chipset, audio, codec, all that kind of stuff. It's just, you don't have room for all the connections and that kind of deal. So this is...
it's a Via chipset, obviously.
Right. Yeah. Everything on there, graphics, everything is going to be obviously built by Via.
Right.
So it's interesting. They're basically creating this as a reference platform for people to build unique kind of small form factor, mid type, even though that I despise that name, the mobile internet device type size computers and things. It's really low power. It apparently maxes out at about 12 watts power consumption. 8 watts at idle, 4.5 watts in suspend mode. So I mean, what that's kind of funny, actually. It uses 8 watts at idle and 12 watts under a full load. So, you know.
It's just going.
Yeah. Passively cooled. So, I mean, Via will be at CES showing off this device and some prototype devices built around it. So I'm hoping that there's some really interesting stuff. They need their key focus and their where they have done well has been in the super small form factor mobility stuff. And it seems like every time they create an advance, Intel comes in right behind them with a very similar type product and kind of pushes them out of the way. So I hope they get some traction with this kind of stuff sooner rather than later. So maybe I'll have some stuff to bring by CES when we're down at the show
That'd be great. Yeah, we're going to do live coverage all day Friday. And we're also going to cover, I decided to cover the evening events, Showstoppers, Pepcom.
Yep, we'll be at both of those.
And we'll be there with the cameras moving around, going from booth to booth. So Wednesday night, Thursday night, we'll have coverage. All day Friday, Ryan will join us, but so will Paul Thurrott, Dick DiBartolo, pretty much the whole Twit crew. Dr. Kiki will be with me. We'll also be sending camera crews out onto the show floor. Really, the idea, as we build this up, is it's going to be a virtual CES. You'll be able to get everything you'd get if you went to CES just by watching Twit Live for those 5 days, all day Saturday and Sunday, too. So,
well, I imagine I'll see you there multiple days then.
You better, because I got a lot of time to fill. but there's going to be a lot to talk about, let's hope, anyway.
Yep.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
Well done. We didn't get to all the stories, but if you want more, you just go to Ryan's website, pcper.com. It is a great enthusiast site, place to go to, of course, see great videos on how to build a computer, but also ratings and reviews and news about all the latest computer hardware. That's pcper.com, and you can join us for this brand new show. We do it live every Wednesday afternoon at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. At
6 p.m. Eastern.
6 p.m., I'm sorry, you're right. 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. Of course, subscribe in iTunes now. Yay. And the video will be coming soon on the Roku box and in iTunes as well. That's on the horizon. We do make a video recording of this. It's just, we have a lot of shows and we're slowly rolling them out one by one.
Which, by the way, thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome.
The funny story is I ordered one that exact morning as well.
Did you cancel the first order, I hope? She's talking about the Roku box we sent.
I tried.
But everybody should have two.
Was unsuccessful, but obviously you need one at both the home and the office. Yeah. So.
And the trick, by the way, to updating the Roku so that you get the Roku application store so that you can get Twit on your Roku, if it doesn't do it the first time you update, you say update and it says no new updates, immediately ask for an update again. And generally it will do it the second time.
Yep. It took me the next day, but when I went to update it, it did update. So yeah.
Great.
It looks very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting. We've got 5 shows on there now. Twit, Twig, Twiff, MacBreak Weekly, Windows Weekly, and many others soon to come. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Alan. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Computer Hardware.